Welcome to our first off-season edition of the Big Pod Machine, our hot stove edition, episode one of the off-season. For Pat Brennan, my partner, I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer. Phil Didion's behind the scenes, the greatest producer in podcast history.
Yep.
Which is appropriate since this is the greatest podcast in baseball history. Anywhere, right, Pat? Anywhere.
In the known universe, at least.
That's right. That's right. Hey, I have a question for you before we get started.
Yeah.
You getting nervous? You worried? You worried at all? You know, I'm not talking about the Reds in the offseason. Talking about the big game this week.
Yeah, I'm nervous.
Pat's all about the Ohio State.
Yeah.
Isn't it where you got the degree that you have?
Yeah. I don't use the, by the way. And there's this new trend of like the university sells t-shirts and hats that just say the T-H-E. I think that is so obnoxious. I got to tell you, we are the most
stupidest thing I've ever seen.
It really is. And it is just such an easy fan base to hate. I get it. I really get it. But I am proud of the journalism education I got there. And I do like to root against that team up north. And the way things have gone in that rivalry, Gordon, I'll believe the Buckeyes are going to win when they are ahead on the scoreboard and the game clock reads 0-0-0-0. And I don't know if that will happen.
Michigan's better than people think. I think they've gotten better all year.
Oh, they're certainly better than they were last year. I agree with you about Michigan this year. And you know, it's so cliche, but it really is one of those rivalries where you have to throw the record out. The teams, just both teams, good years, bad years, they both tend to rise to meet this game. It's unbelievable.
Last year was classic, right?
It was. I mean, Ohio State had what is so far one of the most expensive, arguably the most talented roster in college football history. They went on to win the national championship, but they looked average as hell against Michigan. A classic example, a bad Michigan team. A classic example of just the records don't matter. I'm terrified. Help.
Well, you know, you shouldn't worry too much, and I'll tell you why. Your boys don't have a loss yet. Worst case scenario is to get one loss.
Yeah,
that still gets them in as long as Oregon loses too, and yeah, we'll take care of that for you. I got your
back.
Thank you. For anybody who doesn't know, Oregon's playing in Seattle this week. We'll take care of business.
Yeah. What you didn't do against Ohio State back when the Reds were still playing, but you know.
Hey, we don't need to go there.
Can I tell you something? The name of the student newspaper, which is something I still follow at Ohio State, is called The Lantern. And we take it very seriously. And you take it very seriously if you're a student. One way or another, if you want to study journalism at Ohio State, you have to interact with The Lantern at some point. It's like your laboratory classroom setting, if essentially. They got screwed when they went to Washington. They must have had the worst seats in the freaking house. They had a sliver of window in the press box and a giant freaking beam. It was like a bad joke. They couldn't see the field. They humped it all the way out to Seattle to cover that damn game, and they got stuck in the ugliest, nastiest corner of that crappy press box. Unbelievable. I don't know if that's
well, first of all, as it should be,
gamesmanship.
And second, who are you calling a crappy press box, pal? Actually, it is. It is. The press box is fine. Where it's located,
I've never done a game.
It's like it's higher up than, for anybody that's been to the Washington Nationals or the Pittsburgh Pirates stadiums, look up where the press box is. It's like touching the clouds. That's where it is at Husky Stadium.
So it's like suborbital.
Yeah. Now, the stadium's terrific.
Oh, no, no. The views are incredible.
And I think they've even trademarked the greatest setting because it was awarded that by SI back in the day or something like that. Greatest setting in college football. Yeah.
So you guys have your own version of an obnoxious claim on.
Oh, no, no. Our most obnoxious claim is that the wave was invented at Husky Stadium.
Whatever. Okay. When? During an American football game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like in the 70s.
You know, for as big as the Sounders are out there and as much history as they have, I'm surprised you have such a vast aversion to soccer.
I played soccer 1 year.
Okay.
It sucks.
The Sounders have been around for like half a century.
Yeah. Yeah. It bites. When I was in junior high, I was the big baseball nut and my buddy was a big soccer nut. And every time we had, lunch together or something, it would always be about the Sounders or the Mariners. Sounders were great back then. They had that dude, some dude from Europe with one name, maybe it had a Z in it. And he was like way old, but better than any American player.
Yeah.
And, so it was them and the Cosmos, and the Mariners sucked. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. We've gone down this road probably too far.
Yeah, way too far.
To get back to the original question and your nervousness about the big Michigan game and Ohio State, are you more nervous? Like if you take your personal stakes out of it and you just look, should people be more nervous if they're Ohio State fans or more nervous if they're Reds fans as they approach – this week, and really, never mind the Ohio State part, but if you're Reds fan, extrapolate that even beyond, like this offseason.
Yeah, I'd be terrified if I were a Reds fan. Or maybe I'm conditioned to just what's taking place right now, which is not much. Right, Gordon?
They've said the payroll's going to stay the same.
Yeah.
They don't have much room to work with, maybe between 20 and 25 million, probably closer to 20, and maybe not that much, depending on how much powder you want to keep dry for the trade deadline. And are we talking about the 112 to 114 that they went into the season with last year, or roughly that? Let's call it 115, or the 119 that they finished with. And we're not sure of that, but either way, it's maybe 20 million to work with. That ain't a lot when you look at the 10 free agents that they've got to replace. Nick Martinez being among them, Austin Hayes being among them. He was their cleanup hitter in the playoff series.
Yeah,
their closer being among them, saved 32 games, saved their ass really most of the season.
Yeah,
Emilio Pagan. So that's a tall order for a team that made the playoffs but still has a lot of ground to make up in the division.
Yeah. And I'll just briefly go back to our end of season meeting with Brad Metter and Nick Kroll, and it's a great meeting. We appreciate the opportunity, but my takeaway from that was this isn't a quote. This certainly isn't what Nick Kroll said, but I think you make the playoffs as a wild card team. I think especially with this relatively young group that the Reds had, relatively young core, the expectation is always going to be, okay, what's the next step forward? And how are we going to take the next step forward? My takeaway from that meeting, in the immediate aftermath of getting swept out of the playoffs by the Dodgers, was that the Reds front office isn't... The step forward is not a given. In fact, I believe they think it will be exceedingly difficult to replicate what they did last year. And most years, everyone knows where I stand on the wild card and the third wild card spot and how easy that is to grab. But most years, I'd venture to say being four games over 500 is not going to make it. And this was an outlier year in that sense for the Reds. And they took advantage of it. And that's a credit to them. But I believe this Reds front office was already well aware at that point that they are going to have a hell of a time replicating what they had. And then whether or not that's even good enough to talk about the playoffs is anyone's guess. So this is, the Reds fans are probably pretty tense right now. I don't know about worried or anxious like you would be, like I am, ahead of this football game this weekend, but is anyone having fun with this offseason yet? I don't think so.
I don't think there's any fun to be had. I mean, because you're going to be looking about roster additions around the edges. You're going to be holding your breath on whether they make trades and whether they have to trade somebody good that maybe a fan doesn't want to see traded in order to get something that helps. Where's the fun? I mean, if you thought you had payroll flexibility and you knew you needed one or two pieces and you knew they were in on Kyle Schwarber or somebody, you'd say, yeah, let's go. Let's see what happens. This is fun. But there's none of that to hang your hat on. There's no reason to think that anything like that's coming.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that. Here's you know, one of the other bits of I don't remember if I got this in my roundup from the GM meetings, but Nick Kroll told us a couple of us that he hadn't had any extension talks with anybody either, which you might say, well, who gives a rat's ass about extension talks when you're just talking about making the roster better, except that it probably speaks to how they're viewing the payroll. They're probably trying to keep things relatively clean, their books relatively clean in terms of long-term commitments. Going into this year of labor negotiations when the CBA expires a year from now. When the rules might change at that point.
Yeah.
So, and if that's the case, that means, you know, there's a handful of teams out there being aggressive and ignoring the labor situation, knowing that they'll be fine either way. There's a lot of teams out there that, you know, have jumped on one-year deals, have made trades so far, a couple of teams that have made trades so far, which maybe, and some of them look like they're, you know, manipulating, you know, payroll structures in some of those trades. So it makes you, you know, you bunch the Reds in with that bucket in it.
Yeah.
And again, you know, God, you're kind of right back in many ways. You're right back where you were coming out of 23. You remember they missed the playoffs by a game or two then. And everybody thought, well, all these young guys are going to be so much better. And Matt McClain missed the whole damn season. You know, Ellie took a step forward, but it wasn't enough. Hunter Green turned a corner, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
They didn't have as much bullpen at the end of the day as they had to lean on in 23. And nobody else among the young players did anything. And it kind of feels like that now. Kind of feels like they're looking at, well, Matt McClain should be better after putting a year under his belt since the injury. And Ke'Bryan Hayes has been added at the deadline, and his defense is terrific. And if he can hit a little bit, that's an upgrade there. Noelvi Marte had a bounce back in 25. Maybe he solidifies right field and he's even a better productive bat. And then, you know, you start to do things like that, and then you start to build these little increments of hope, and you stack one on top of the other, and it's, you know, like crossing your fingers and, you know, hoping for, you know, Santa Claus to come on Christmas morning or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a tough road, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if nothing else, the front office has done an effective job of messaging and not raising expectations, because from what I can tell, the fan base is pretty much, you know, washed its hands of any expectation of, Kyle Schwarber signing, you know, the Hunter Green.
Pete Alonso's probably going back to the Mets either way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and you're like, you're not going to be able to afford him anyway.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to choose to afford him. If you're the
Reds. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, fans won't be taken by surprise by what happens or doesn't happen. And I guess there's value in that.
Here, let me show you value. I got a prop here. You know what that is?
Ooh, see that? What is that?
That's a World Series ring. It's a replica. They gave these away at Dodger Stadium this year. This is a Mookie Betts replica 2024 World Series ring for the Dodgers.
Pretty nice.
And then, of course, Mookie's going to get another one now.
Yeah.
After this World Series, which, by the way, was a terrific World Series.
Was, yes.
Look at all those diamonds and all that gold and all that blue in the logo. That's not what Reds fans want to see, obviously. How long before the Reds get one of these? I don't know if I think you said you saw that story that posted last week. Derek Gould at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and I teamed up and we surveyed 21 executives from 21 teams.
Yeah.
In an anonymous survey of who would be the next NL Central team to win the World Series. And the reason that this is pertinent is twofold. One, it's basically a small market division.
Yeah.
Four of the five smallest markets as measured by MLB's internal metrics are in that division. They haven't won a World Series, haven't been to a World Series since the Cubs won it in 2016, the one outlier among the five teams that's a top five revenue team. And they beat an AL Central team, Terry Francona's Cleveland, then Indians. And that's the last time an AL Central team has been there, the small market team in that division. And now as we address what MLB calls, you know, is calling disparity and the union saying, well, they want a salary cap. And that's what this CBA battle is going to be over. Either one of those, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The Centrals have been left behind since 2016. And so three of them made the playoffs in the NL Central this year.
Two in the AL Central.
And one of the NL Central teams that made it had the best record in baseball and got swept by the Dodgers in the LCS. So not surprisingly, the team with the money, the Cubs, got the most votes, 11 votes.
Yeah.
The Brewers, in large part just because they're the two-time defending champ and they had the best record this year, got seven votes. Just and so the rationale for the people that voted for the Cubs was almost exclusively resources. For the Brewers, it was almost exclusively young talent, and they're already on top of that division. The Reds got one vote. And just so people know, we did talk to everybody. I think I dropped my ring. We did talk to everybody in the NL Central. Everybody in the NL Central voted, but we didn't allow them to vote for their own team. So the Reds vote didn't come from the Reds. And then I said 21. That doesn't add up to 21. Two wouldn't vote. Two American League executives refused to vote. But one had a really interesting comment. Does realignment count? He said. Because that would be my pick. In other words, it's going to be long enough that it's going to take an overhaul of the current landscape.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating. And clearly the results suggest that there is this sense of economic disparity that comes when you look at potential to win. So what do you make of those votes, and what do you think? Like, who will be the next NL Central World Series participant even? And how long might it take?
I would have voted for the Brewers because, you know, they're just, they're so damn good. And the, you know, some years the Cubs are all in, some years they're not. It's just, you know, they are.
I'll tell you, I used to cover the Cubs. They haven't been all in, even by a generous definition, since maybe 19, maybe. Yeah. If you give them credit for signing Craig Kimbrell in June, or I guess they signed him in May, but he debuted for him in June. I mean, that would be the last time that you could even generously say that they were all in. And I would suggest that they weren't even all in since 16, maybe.
Yeah, right. Which takes me back to a theory I have, Gordon, which is that a small market is a mentality, not the end product of a spreadsheet. But I won't go too far down that road. But Chicago is a great example of that, you know, top five marketplace, but they operate like a middle tier team. Is that fair to say?
The way I look at it is they should be taking, instead, put it this way, take my opinion out of it, but instead of flexing their built-in advantage of resources and throttle holding the division, they instead take advantage of the division's small market status to not spend at the very top and put more money in their pockets.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, going back to your question, the Cubs and Brewers are the two logical choices there. I'm a little surprised that the Brewers ended up, I guess, second place in that voting. How did the Cardinals do?
No votes. For the Cardinals or the Pirates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pirates, I get.
And one executive did kind of go down the road of, like, kind of went back and forth and briefly considered the Cardinals in the context of they just had a regime change. Yeah. And if they get it right, the process could take long enough. It could take long enough for an NL Central team to get there that it could be the Cardinals.
Oh, dear.
So this is the kind of thinking when people are looking at that division that the people inside of baseball are using and thinking.
Yikes. Needless to say, if the Reds are giving out replica world championship rings anytime soon, it's going to be for the Big Red Machine or the 1990 team.
Yeah. I mean, we might see it with 50 years ago was the last time the Big Red Machine won one.
Yeah.
76. I mean, when we talk about the 26 season. So maybe that's how fans will see it. Yeah.
Hey, where are you on? I'm going off script here a little bit, but where are you on the labor talks and the prospects for baseball in 2 years?
But whether they're going to shut it down?
Yeah.
Well, I've talked to agents who don't think they'll shut it down because they think they'd be. I think the word one used was too stupid. They're not that stupid.
Okay.
Just look at the success of this World Series in bringing fans from all over the world in.
Yeah.
You had a nation's team, Canada,
yes,
take it to the 11th inning of Game 7, and you had a nation's team, Japan, right?
That's a great way to
holding,
say it.
Holding watch parties and setting all kinds of international viewership number records, watching Shohei and Yamamoto. And Roki Sasaki, for that matter. So when you're penetrating international markets like that and I mean, growing the game before our eyes in 7 World Series games this fall, not to mention the fact you're already at industry record levels of revenue and your least valuable team, the Tampa Bay Rays, just sold for $1.7 billion. I think that speaks to enough prosperity that you would be utter fools to even engage in threats to shut it down.
Yeah.
Because all of this is built on a product that is your labor. And it's, and you've got, you're in a place right now where you don't, you can make tweaks to the CBA. You've already got a soft cap. You don't, why go for the jugular on this? It makes no sense. There's a lot of goodwill involved in this. And if you take that out of the picture and make this about a money grab, which is all a salary cap is, it's saying, look, we can't get our own house in order. So labor, we're going to take it out of your ass. We need you to help us get, we need you to help us not pay you guys as much. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
What worker in any industry would agree to that? And if you draw that hard line and create a shutdown, imagine all that built up over all these years since the last shutdown 30 years ago. And you lose that all over again? I'm not sure you get it back.
I don't think so.
At the levels that it's at.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at on it. So
a strike in modern times, Gordon, the only one that I can think of that comes to mind is the NHL in the early 2000s, and it's never been the same. It never recovered. And, you know, you had great years for the NHL. You had the Blackhawks. None of that back. You had major market versus major market Stanley Cup. They never recovered. And I don't know.
American player ever come along since then.
Yeah. And
win three Stanley Cups in Chicago.
I think it's relevant in this conversation, if only tangentially, because that can serve as a bellwether for what can happen.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's way more than tangential.
Okay,
I think it's very close to apples to apples when you consider that, like, your best case for saying, well, this ain't like that, is that the NHL's the fourth league in the Big Four.
I would say before the strike, it was not that. It was a very strong game.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you. That's my point, is that baseball put itself in position where it started to become sort of niche, and certainly nothing approaching the NFL. Nobody is. But the NBA even is in many ways higher. And college football, certainly. And there's so many more entertainment choices, especially for young people these days. Days, but really to watch competitive sports, gaming. So much more than the last time they shut this down. So much more than when the NHL shut down. That there's so much more to lose, and that to me is what makes it just an absolute foolish, dumbass move. If they even come close to shutting it down.
I'm glad I asked. It took us down that road.
Hey, before we go, and by the way, it's no accident that we haven't even talked about free agents. Why would we? And nobody's going to hear of the guys that the Reds right now look like they might be in. So we can revisit that maybe as we get closer to the winter meetings.
Yeah.
And we see what's left on the board at that point and what their tax seems to be. But I got another prop for you. I got another thing to show you. This came in the mail over the weekend.
Oh,
this is. Wait a minute. That's not the ballot. Hold on. There it is. That's the Hall of Fame ballot.
That's the real thing right there.
And so, I got to fill that out and get it back by the end of December. Got a few choices to make. But the reason I bring that up and show that to you is, I got to thinking, like, who's the next Red? I mean, I don't see anybody on this list. And I just glanced at it real quick. I don't see anybody on this list that would necessarily go in as a Red, even if by some long shot chance they got elected. Who would be the next Red? I mean, Joey Votto's the obvious possibility, right? and he's a borderline candidate. I've talked to some voters who, when he retired, I talked to some voters who were adamant that, oh, he's not a Hall of Famer. And I looked at his numbers against his peers, and I thought, you know, I could make the case for him.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's that's probably as strong as it gets, right?
In terms of sentiment for Joe, specifically or Reds?
Let's say the retired or the veteran players who are no longer Reds, some any retired or playing for other teams, Luis Castillo?
Yeah, I'm thinking
Eugenio Suarez. I don't think so. I'm not sure. And how about this one for you, Pat? And this one we can actually have a real discussion on. How about the current roster? You know, there's a lot of fanfare with all these young players that came in, and particularly in 23. Some of them have already, in many people's minds, flamed out. If you were to list a top three on the current roster, and let's go 40-man roster.
Yeah.
Top three likeliest potential Hall of Famers on the Reds 40-man roster right now. I mean, they're all so young. It's a crapshoot either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Well, I mean, it would be Ellie is a slam
number
dunk.
One's obvious, right?
Yeah, Ellie.
Ellie's number one. Because he's already done it, and he's done it at such a young age. He's got a head start on everybody.
Yeah.
He could put up counting numbers if he doesn't get any better than he is right now, he could put up counting numbers and get him in.
Yeah. So, Hunter Green, probably, right?
He's got the ability.
Maybe, yeah. And then
he's
young. So, yeah. The big one for me is the third one, because I don't think that there's an obvious player who is part of the core of the current team. And this is a total shot in the dark. I might just throw Sal Stewart on there at number three.
Yeah, you might as well, right? The unproven guy that sort of caught lightning in a bottle when he got called up for a debut last year.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows where he goes, but if he goes the right direction, why not?
I mean, just to be clear, you know, I mean, there is just nothing to substantiate the idea that this kid is bound for the Hall of Fame. But you looking at, I'm like going through the whole system, the whole farm system.
What about Alfredo Duno?
Yeah, Edwin Rios, maybe.
You mean Edwin Arroyo?
Oh, Edwin Arroyo. Yeah.
Not Edwin.
I had
Rios.
It right the first time.
And you know, could Noelvi take off?
Sure, maybe.
Maybe. Chase Burns, based on the power we saw, if he stays healthy.
Oh, I missed
Brett Lauder.
Yeah, they're so young. It's like, yeah.
Who knows?
I mean,
even Chase Burns as a rookie spent some time on the IL with a little flexor thing.
Yeah, I mean,
that might be the only thing. Yeah,
I was
going to say that might be the only thing that holds him back is health, if anything were to hold him back. And it's not that there's red flags or anything like that.
It's just the
nature of pitching. But then on the other hand, you know, he still hasn't done it yet for a full season.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, he wasn't Paul Skeens either. In terms of, kind of never having that hiccup as he broke in.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a Reds fan, I think, I don't think Joey Votto is a first ballot guy. So you'll have that debated. I foresee that being a pretty intense, hot Hall of Fame debate. And maybe one that lasts years.
He's likely, if he doesn't, for however many years he doesn't make it, he'll get enough support that he stays on the ballot.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he never makes it on the writer's ballot, yeah, you're right. It'll be debated for a decade plus.
Yeah. So I mean, you've got that to occupy you in lieu of no obvious slam dunk Hall of Famers. You could also go, with that three spot, if you're picking three, likely, you know, Reds adjacent people who could end up in the Hall of Fame. Number three, Gordon Whitmire, ends up in the writer's wing.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, like that, like that's ever happened. And, you know, I will.
Do you have a better chance?
Well, do I have a better chance than CES?
Yeah.
I might get a little closer to the finish line in that race. But you know what, to circle back to some of the economic stuff we talked about, when you look at the discussion we're having about this current roster, it all boils down to the same thing. None, like a lot of these guys haven't established themselves to the point, except maybe Ellie, because it's been the better part of three seasons now, and he's done nothing but, even with some slumps and some power droughts, he's a two-time All-Star, and he's put up numbers, and we know he played with that quad strain for the better part of the second half, and that impacted, I mean, even his stolen base attempts, and I'm sure it impacted his power. So other than him, I mean, none of these young guys have fully established themselves. Even Hunter Green, as good as he is, and as much as you expect when he gets on the mound every start, he hasn't made 30 starts in the season.
So
there remains getting a full season for him too. And yet then you turn around and you look over at the Dodgers, or you look at the Blue Jays, the two teams that were in the World Series, and you see Hall of Famers all over those rosters, or at least certainly the Dodgers roster. You got, I mean, the top three guys in the order, right? I showed you Mookie's ring. Mookie's one of them. Shohei, Freddie Freeman. Then you go down the list, and they got a two-time Cy Young Award winner in Blake Snell. I don't know where he finishes. Yeah, Clayton Kershaw was on that roster.
Yeah.
I mean, so Yamamoto, the way he's looked so far. And then so now you go over to the Blue Jays and you got Vlad Jr. They had Scherzer on that roster. And so it kind of speaks to, and Scherzer mattered in the postseason for those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And he's 40 years old, 40-something years old. I don't know how old he is. I'm probably, I conflate his age with Verlander's all the time. And I know one's older and I always forget. So one's probably late 30s and one's probably. I'm probably aging Scherzer, but the point is that when you can afford to go get these guys, these impact veteran guys, that's what makes the difference in October, and that's part of why I think the Brewers look so good during the regular season with their incredible talent, but that's very young, and their style of play. But you get into these tense, dense series in October, and you're seeing the same team over and over again, and same relievers over and over again, and they're seeing the hitters over and over again. Experience a lot of times can swing a game, and a game can swing a postseason.
Yeah.
Never mind, a series. And so when they go up against the Dodgers, they've got talent. You know, give those guys 4 years, and if they're all together and they add a little bit, they could look like the Dodgers. But that's not going to happen. And so this is where the NL Central is, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, let's talk about something upbeat. What do you got planned for Thanksgiving?
Oh man,
you're gonna be at the Bengals game, right?
Yeah, I'll be Phil and I'll both be there. I'll be nice. Producer Phil. Yeah, that's the late game on Thanksgiving, so I'll be hanging out. I'm staying in the same hotel as our good friend Mike Trags Petralia, so he and I might pal around in the Inner Harbor that day, but. Yeah, and then maybe I'll squeeze in. I might take an Amtrak back to Philadelphia, see some family for a day or two. And,
oh, sweet. Nice.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Get some leftovers.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. If they have them, I will take them. What about you? What do you got
planned? Thanksgiving side dish?
Ooh. Mashed potatoes.
That's good. That's
yeah,
solid. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, I feel like mashed potatoes and gravy should count as one, but I just don't want to fight you on it, Gordon. So I'll just say mashed potatoes. But I don't eat them dry. I'm not a weird.
Mashed
I'm not
potatoes
that weird.
And gravy, that counts.
Okay. All right.
Does your family have any sort of special things that they do?
Ooh, that's a great question. I guess not. Nothing's coming to mind. I guess not. But what we really do well is, man, I think autumn in the Northeast, and I've never really been in Chicago this time of year that I can think of, but the Northeast corridor in autumn is just totally picturesque to me. So I've always
it's famous for that, isn't it?
What's that?
I think it's famous for that.
I guess so. Well, I mean, I guess
New England, the New England area.
Yeah, I mean, the holiday kind of originated there. Am I getting my history right?
Oh yeah, that's right. And then like Plymouth Rock up there somewhere.
Yeah. So I will say that nothing special that I can recall that we really do, but Thanksgiving always felt very idyllic in the Northeast setting, and I really like. I'll really enjoy being on the East Coast for even if I'm about 100 miles from home or whatever it is. I'll really enjoy that. So. Oh, what about you? What about
very cool?
Yeah,
we got some family coming in. There'll be about eight around the table, and I do this thing. I got my grandmother on my dad's side was like full Norwegian, right? And so she would make she would cook stuff and make some treats that were Norwegian. Traditions, and one of them was something called lefse, which is a sort of potato based almost like a tortilla. And you make it on a hot dry griddle after you bunch of ingredients you put overnight in the freezer, then you got this dough you work with. Anyway, she told me how to make it. It's funny, when I was young, I'd go visit her. I say, how do you make this? She would tell me. I said, well, don't you have a recipe? She said, no. She never measured ingredients. She said, you do this, you do that. Put some of this in there. How much? Enough. You work with it. You play with it. So over the years, I've made it once or twice a year. Thanksgiving, Christmas,
And
I got my own system down for it. So we'll make a batch of that, and then you can.
That's great.
And because it's potato based, man, I'm telling you, that goes with turkey. You roll some turkey up in one of those.
Oh, okay.
That's a treat, man.
I'm intrigued by this. Trying to think.
Well, maybe I'll share some with you.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll make sure that you get some this holiday season. Maybe I'll give you some at Reds Fest.
Hey, that's right.
That's good in January. It's right after the holidays.
Good Reds news. Reds Fest is coming back, Gordon. It's bad.
And there you go.
They're going to stage the thing at the redone convention center down, the Duke Energy Convention Center downtown. They've already opened, they just this week, Gordon, opened kind of an outdoor plaza area where people can hang out. There are gardens. Right now, the big attraction there is the winter, the traditional downtown winter skating area, which looks, they used to do that in Fountain Square. It was fun. I did it a couple times. The rink was really small because Fountain Square isn't this great.
Did you play hockey?
Yeah, I did.
So you can skate pretty well, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Not bad.
Elbows up in the corners. So, yeah, the Duke Energy Convention Center, this isn't a sales pitch, by the way. If they wanted to send me a check, I would cash it. But the Duke Energy Convention Center is coming along, and I think because of that, we are looking at a Reds Fest return. And that'll
That's
be
what
fun.
They say.
That'll be fun, yeah.
It'd be nice to see some players there, like some new players, maybe a championship player or two.
Yeah, well. You know, I mean, well, if you had to assign a percentage to the likelihood of a championship caliber free agent being signed by this team, what would that number be, Gordon?
I mean, when you say championship caliber, I mean, Gavin Lux has a couple World Series rings. Jose Trevino has been to World Series.
Starter.
I mean, I'm not taking anything away from those guys.
No.
They know how to win. They've seen it. They've been part of it. But when you say championship caliber player, are you talking about the guy that leads the charge?
A leader of the charge?
An impact guy?
Yeah.
A guy that's going to come in and not play a role?
Yeah.
Like not be a role player?
Right.
No, I don't see that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, you know,
not to dive back into the podcast, but we were winding.
They'll probably get some guys that are capable of pitching late innings and maybe closing a game. I think it's going to be really tough to expect Miller to be back. He's getting a lot of attention from teams already, and we saw Rezal Iglesias just get signed for $16 million to go back to the Braves. Yeah. Edwin Diaz is out there once. Edwin Diaz, you're going to see Pagan's market crystal a little bit. But if you're looking at short-term guys in that age range, and I think Pagan's younger than Iglesias by a year or so, and you know, which means maybe he gets a two-year deal. If you're talking about $16 million a year for a guy that saves 32 games with a sub-3 ERA, he can come back to the Reds.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Wish I hadn't reopened that.
There we go. Finishing on a downer note again. Reds Fest. Reds Fest.
Reds Fest.
And Thanksgiving. And I'm not going to talk about the Michigan game.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm trying to block it out. I've got work to do this week. I have to focus.
The Huskies against Oregon.
Yeah.
At least you'll have Oregon going down.
Very relevant. Very relevant to the football playoff, the college football playoff.
Go Huskies.
Go Huskies. I'm on the Husky train this week.
All right. I like to hear that. That's a good note to end on. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening again. And we're going to try to do these on a regular basis. And when there's news this offseason, Look for us to drop an emergency podcast on the news. So thanks for joining us. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. And for Pat, for Phil, I'm Gordon Whitmire. And thanks for listening.